Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, September 7th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it may be studio lights instead of candles, but we'll have a little dinner party on today's program. What are the essentials for hosting a dinner party? That'll be the talk of the town. Is it the appetizers, the side dishes, the main course, or should the focus be on dessert or the drink selection? Well, there are just so many questions. We brought in experts today. Cocktail master John Fisher is here of the Culinary Institute of America. He is joined by the human version of the food encyclopedia, Deanna Fox. If you have a question about throwing an out-of-this-world dinner party, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Drinks, food, Deanna Fox, John Fisher, your calls coming up on Vox Pop Food Friday right after the news. Once again, welcome back to Food Friday. I'm Ray Graff. Today we're exploring the allure and secrets behind hosting a dinner party. Our experts are spirits aficionado John Fisher and food extraordinaire Deanna Fox. Deanna is a cooking instructor and food and agricultural journalist based in the Capital Region. Her work appears locally in the Times Union, the Daily Gazette, and all over Albany, as well as in national publications like USA Today, the Washington Post, Eater, The Kitchen, and Beer Advocate. Deanna is also co-host of the new WAMC podcast, Watch, Read, Listen, Feed. Her work and classes can be found at foxonfood.com. John is a professor of hospitality and service management at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York. Previously, he was cheering for that, are you? It's a novelty.
Our teams are horrible.
Oh, good for you. Previously, he was general manager at the Morel Wine Bar and Cafe in New York. Deanna and John, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, sir.
What a great idea for a show. The secrets of a dinner party. I've never been to a dinner party, and I've never hosted
one. You have to.
And I will never do either of those things in my life.
That's not true. Well, every night at your house is like a dinner party because you have so many people.
It's like the end of a dinner party after everyone's hammered and aggressive and nasty. If you have a question about dinner parties, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Voxpop@wamc.org is the email address. Our producer, Jimmy the Hammer Lavoulis, he's got the day off today. So that means I'm watching the email. I will do my best, I promise. Best way to get through is just a call, 800-348-2551. So whose great idea was doing a Food Friday about a dinner party?
That was all John.
Was that your idea, Fisher?
Believe it or not, yes. I do come up with an idea every once in a while. But, you know, I've done a bunch of cocktail shows, and I've done beer shows and beer and cheese and chili. And I realize that, you know, not a lot of people know how to put a dinner party together. It's not just like, you know, being a culinary graduate and being a cook or being a great cook and cooking teacher.
Right.
There's more to it than just the quality of the food and booze, although those are important too.
Well, you know, again, and I'm not joking. I don't believe I've ever been to a dinner party, and I promise you that it's the furthest thing that I would want to do. But you made a great list about dinner party tips, and I assume Deanna did most of the work here.
Oh, no, she definitely did.
No,
yeah.
No.
And the first one, make a good first impression.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Decorate the house? Clean it up? Vacuum? What?
Well, I feel about cleaning the house. That's like the thing that I always get stressed out about when I have a dinner party. Because I have kids at home. Now I have cats. And it's, you know, just getting the house tidy. But I've realized that nobody really cares about how clean your house is as long as the bathroom is clean. Like, if all that you do is the bathroom.
Right. One of the only reasons is to go to a Yankee Candle store.
That's right.
And there we go. Now we're off. Thank you, John.
Speaking of which, I think we need to show how to give a good first impression.
And the first impression is with booze? Is that how you do it, John?
Well, not necessarily booze.
Oh, that's a sound.
What do you got there?
Is so this
champagne?
Is a cold duck. So this is an affordable sparkling wine.
Okay. And when you say affordable in the Culinary Institute sense, what's it, 70, 80 bucks a bottle?
Yeah, right.
No?
I'm a professor now. I'm not a restaurant manager anymore. you should be able to find a Cremant d'Alsace. This is a Cremant rosé is from Limoux, so it's not even from Alsace. So Cremant, C-R-E-M-A-N-T, is the French word for sparkling wine that is made in the Champagne method. Cheers.
Cheers all.
Cheers.
Okay. Sorry about these cups. They were in the back seat when it was hot, and that's started melting. So Cremant is the French word for sparkling wine that is made in the Champagne method, and they can't call it Champagne because it's not from Champagne.
Right.
And it's almost always like $15.
Oh, nice.
Anywhere between, I've seen some bottles for 12. I've seen it as much as close to 20. If it was like a Cremant de Bourgogne from Burgundy. And it's made the same way champagne is. It's made in the bottle with the secondary fermentation, the method Champenoise.
Yeah.
And they just can't legally call it that.
It's very nice. It has a little sweetness to it, I would
just think. And that's just, you want that for an aperitif. You don't want, you know, teeth rattling dryness in a champagne when you're handing the glass to somebody when they walk in the front door. And actually one of the tips is to basically hand them something when they walk in, and they won't ask for a scotch and soda or a Manhattan.
That's right.
So if you're really cheap.
Well, not that. It's convenience. Do you want to spend all night tending bar, or do you want to spend time with your guests? If you have a tray full of glasses of sparkling wine and maybe some bubbly water, and maybe I brought along a batched cocktail, and I'll talk about how to do a bottled cocktail so you don't have to be standing there shaking and stirring.
Yeah.
You hand it to them, they're not going to say no. And you have kept yourself from having to make a gin and tonic and a vodka tonic and a rum and et cetera.
My right. parents would do a like a New Year's Eve party when my brother and I were little. Not little, but 9, 10, 11. And my father would have us bartend.
Right.
I don't even think it's legal to do this anymore, but this was a long time
probably
ago.
Probably never was. But
no.
But it's a great idea.
But the guy with the huge nose would ask for an extra dry Rob Roy every 20 minutes.
It's like you know what two fingers looks like.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, the OWC Fields method of two fingers.
Yeah.
You know.
Spread them out. Peace sign.
Out. Spread
yeah.
them out.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's a call-in show about food and dinner parties here today. Make a game plan is one of yours, Deanna.
Yeah, just have a plan for not so much the dinner party itself, but everything leading up to it. So, like I said, just getting your house in order. And then also what you're going to do as far as the food goes. You don't want to spend the whole day cooking. You want to do as much ahead of time as you can. It's just like, think about like Thanksgiving. You try to make your pie doughs ahead of time and that kind of thing. And you can apply the same theory to a dinner party. So as much chopping as you can do in advance, as much prep work as you can do in advance, do it so that when you're in like the last hour before people start arriving, you're not like frazzled. Your kitchen's a disaster trying to get everything done. Like pretty much everything I made here today is something you could make even the night before.
And did you do that? I mean, this looks like it took some work. And
no.
It tastes like it took some work.
No, I actually made this one. I made the manicotti last night. I made everything for the savory apple tart last night as well. And then I just assembled it and baked it today. And I made the pudding last night. So,
well, after we get back from our break, I want you to describe what you made today. The recipes are online, and that's not the manicotti that I remember. I got to be honest with you. This is something completely different. So we'll talk about that as well. Nothing has to be fancy is another one of your important reminders.
Yeah. You know, last year I had a dinner party with some friends. My kids were really excited for it. I'm not sure why, but they wanted to like contribute something. And their culinary skills kind of extended to spreading peanut butter. And
yeah.
Ants on a log have always been a big hit in my house. And that was like the thing they wanted to make. So they just got out celery sticks, peanut butter, and raisins. And they made ants on a log and put them out. And it was like the biggest hit. So I think people like the novelty and that kind of thing. But you also don't have to do anything that's crazy fancy. If you want to do something that's really fancy, save it for like when you've just got a couple of friends coming over who
yeah.
you trust and love, and they love you back and will be forgiving if something goes awry. But otherwise, just keep it simple. And really, people are there more for the company, I think, than the food.
And good, John, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that, you know, you think you're doing your guests a favor by making something fancy like veal scallopine or something.
Yeah.
And doing a sautéed dish for 8 people is ridiculously hard.
Yeah.
You know, in a professional kitchen, you have 6 burners and as many frying pans as you need. You don't have that at home. And so doing something a la minute like that makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, you could always go the other way and just Ritz crackers and easy cheese, right?
Well, the aerosol cheese is it's fine for the most part, but it doesn't melt.
Yeah.
Mold does not grow on it, so you can do it weeks ahead.
John Fisher is here. Deanna Fox here. We talk about dinner party tips today on the show. Our number is 800-348-2551. Some delicious food to discuss, which we will do in a moment. Vox Pop on WAMC. It's a Food Friday. Ray Graff here. The number is 800-348-2551. Today we talk about the perfect dinner party with John Fisher and Deanna Fox and the music. You had suggestions for the bumper music for this program, and you say music is important.
Well, I'm a lot older than Deanna, so her suggestions are a little bit more hip than mine.
Yeah.
But I grew up in a family where the dinner party was an art form, and my mom was a great cook and a great hostess, and I learned. I think I went to culinary school because of her.
Yeah.
Not just the cooking, but the hospitality and the hosting. And one of the things that we would always have on the stereo, this is back with the stack of LPs and the automatic auto changer, was Ella Fitzgerald songbook series.
Yeah.
So the Cole Porter songbook, Gershwin songbook, Rodgers and Hart. And it's the perfect dinner party music because it's background. It's all about the same volume level the whole time.
Yeah.
And it is, if you care to stop and listen to it, it's wonderful, but it's also great in the background. So between that, and I also love putting Modern Jazz Quartet on because it's just, you know, with bags on the vibes.
Yeah, Milt Jackson, you can't go wrong.
It's a relaxed vibe.
And you say Deanna goes more modern. So what, Metallica at your dinner party?
No, I am going to be talking about more modern. My suggestion was, if you want, when people are coming in, I'm a big, like, you know, putting together a playlist. You know, my phone with Bluetooth speaker kind of ordeal. But, you know, play something that's a little bit more upbeat when people are coming in to set the tone. But nothing too offensive. Like, don't play hardcore
or Beastie Boys or anything like that.
Beastie Boys, I mean, if that's the crowd. But be able to know your crowd. But just, I have just a Beatles playlist.
Yeah, that'll work.
That's like 2 hours long. And it's just like really non-offensive music that people can kind of recognize. They're not like straining to figure it out. They can focus on the conversation, and it's just like easy background music that really isn't going to upset anybody.
I think my life is easy background music. It's all the time.
You are an easy listening kind of guy.
Well, I like the music, the good swinging stuff, you know?
But I think part of this also goes back to my theory of restaurant management, which is this sounds like a Hallmark card, but the true music is the sound of happy people.
Yeah.
And in a restaurant, all you need music for is when you first open, there's nobody there, and it's to keep them from feeling like it's a library. If people walked into a silent restaurant, it's like, shh, be quiet.
Right.
There's nobody. But that little bit of music, and they can relax. But then you get the stupid restaurant manager who starts escalating. Oh, I can't hear the music anymore. Let's turn it up.
Yeah.
And so the guests have to talk louder. And then I can't hear the music again. And this goes on until customers are screaming at each other. So
you don't want that at your dinner party?
No.
No.
All right, let's take a call, and then we'll talk about what Deanna brought today, and it's delicious. 800-348-2551 is the number. Adrian in New Paltz. Adrian, you're on.
Hey, hi. I wonder if your guests would want to chat about the buffet kind of line. You know, we've tried these little cooker things from the Party City and warming different little hors d'oeuvre items and snack stuff, as opposed to regular traditional seating. And here we're going to serve this, and here we're going to serve that. It's quite a bunch of logistics. We got 3 grandkids and assorted relatives that come up, and we're doing 10, 12 people at a time. So let them talk about the pros and cons of a serving line versus here's your portion, here's your portion, here's your portion.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I would say if you have like 12 people, it's almost impossible to like dish out for everybody.
Right.
You can do, there's 2 thoughts on the buffet. The first one is you plan out a meal. If you're, you know, if it's like a potluck kind of thing, you can kind of make suggestions to people for what to bring. So it's all kind of cohesive. It kind of goes back to that game plan idea. But plan on making things that either you're going to bake in the oven and come out, and then they're ready to serve, and they'll hold their heat for a little bit, or things that are fine being served at room temperature. The other idea is, you know, you could invest a lot of money in those chafing dishes and steam table ideas, but, you know, you use them like once a year.
Yeah.
And they just take up a lot of space. But another idea is, if you have a lot of things that need to stay warm until everybody's coming, just set your oven to like a really low temp. Like, my oven goes down to 175, I think. Most ovens will go to about 200. And do just like a shallow pan of water in the bottom rack of the oven. So you can tent things with foil. You have a little bit of moisture in there so things don't dry out. And then as people are arriving, just stack them in the oven, pull them out, you know, put them on some trivets, and then let people serve themselves.
And when you're setting up the buffet line, put the dishes in an order that makes sense for the people who loading their plates up. You don't want them to get the end of the line and say, oh, look, turkey cutlets. That's what I want. You know, and also remember, the green leafy salads take up a lot of room
right.
on their plate. So maybe make sure they have an extra plate for the salad, or maybe preset the salad at the table and let them fill up their plates with more of the, you know, the substantial food.
That sounds like more work, though. You're preparing too many things if you have a buffet line.
You know, it's not a lot of work if everybody's bringing something. So if it's a potluck sort of dinner party, that airs more to specifically potluck than I would say dinner party. But, you know, at Hanukkah every year, my friends come over and we just do brisket and latkes. And it's buffet style, essentially. Or it rather, I put everything on the kitchen table. People make themselves a plate and then they take
yeah.
it into the dining room. And,
yeah.
you know, it's only like four or five things. So it's not too much. It's still the same concept as a buffet, but you're not, you know, it's not like one of those huge Ponderosa-style buffets where there's just 3 dozen
Peony
options.
Shrimp.
Yeah.
The number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. It's a Food Friday, the secrets of throwing a great dinner party with John Fisher and Deanna Fox. Deanna Fox, tell us about the manicotti first.
Yeah, I just, you know, we're heading into fall, so I tried to do some fall-inspired things. So I just basically took some butternut squash that I roasted, and I blended it in my food processor with some mascarpone cheese and ricotta cheese and some nutmeg, salt, pepper, and Parmesan, and filled, cooked, just till al dente, manicotti shells with that. And then they made a really simple bechamel. If you've ever made macaroni and cheese, you've made a bechamel sauce. It's just a white sauce. And poured that over the top and put some cheese over the top. And that sat in the fridge for 12, 15 hours.
Really?
Yeah. And then I baked it. It was just covered in foil, and I just popped it in the oven. I took the foil off and let it kind of blister and char on the top. And it was like totally hands-off.
How long did you cook that?
It was probably in the oven for like an hour.
Mm.
Yeah. Just so it would warm through. And then I made a savory apple tart. So it's just a basic pie crust, unsweetened pie crust. And then it's some cheese, some caramelized onions, some sliced apple, a little more cheese, some thyme, pop it in the oven. And it's good. This one's good. Hot, cold, room temperature. It's good for brunch, dinner, midnight snack.
Yeah, I was going to say,
whatever.
That's not a dessert. That's a meal right there.
That's an appetizer. You do that with a tossed green salad and you're set.
Right, and you could even do it. I did it in a 12-inch tart pan, but you could even do them just in individual like muffin tins or, you know, tart tins so that everybody just has one. You don't have to worry about a plate. People can just, you know, 2-3 bites into their mouth. And then I just made actually the first recipe I ever learned how to make, which is chocolate pudding.
Ooh.
And I feel like that's
She learned that in the womb.
But yeah, it's just basic chocolate pudding. The recipe's up on the WAMC website. And
which you cannot go wrong with chocolate pudding.
I don't think so either. You could do vanilla pudding if you wanted to, but it's just one of those things where I like to put out cheese and fruit and also just a little bit of chocolate for the end of a meal, especially if it's for a big crowd. This is a recipe that doubles really easily, so if you have to. It actually made 6. I brought 4 because I ate the other 2.
You have to test them.
One last night and one for breakfast. But anyway.
You had to see if it held.
That's right. Yeah. But it's really easy. You could do this, have everybody take a little, you know, cup of pudding, and then you could also put out like just a communal cheese board with some fruit and whatever. And again, that's a really easy thing. You can cut it up, put some plastic wrap over it until you're ready to serve it.
Mm.
And
it's good stuff.
There you go. And I kind of feel like if you do something really impressive at the beginning of a meal, like the tart, which looks pretty, but it's actually really easy to make, and then do something really great, like really just warm, loving chocolate pudding and a little really good cheese that you pay just a little bit extra for the cheesemonger, you know, people don't care what you did in the middle.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Bookends.
Yeah, that's right.
The bookends are what matter.
All right, John Fisher, before we get back to the phones at 800-348-2551, you gave me two drinks while we were talking, and I've not had either one. The one has an orange slice in it.
That's a, this is a Lillet, L-I-L-L-E-T, which is a, it's an aromatized wine, so it's basically like a sweet vermouth.
Mm.
It is the most popular aperitif wine in the country, and people still don't
know about it. In our country?
Yes.
Really?
And it really isn't consumed in France much, strangely enough.
Spell it.
Lillet, L-I-L-L-E-T.
It's very good. Mm-hmm. It's very sweet, though.
And the, well, that's why there's the orange in there.
Ah.
The, usually I serve it on the rocks, too, which dilutes it a little bit. But the original Quina Lillet was the ingredient in that Vespers cocktail.
The James Bond cocktail.
Martini. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But this is the current one, and this goes back to what I was saying before about having a tray full of things for people to drink. You know, just this is a bottle and an orange and glasses, and you aren't back there with the ice bucket and the soda siphon and anything.
Yeah.
And people, you hand them a drink, they're going to drink it. Now,
okay.
They might then ask for their cocktail, but this is so tasty, they might say, hey, can I have another one of those?
Right.
Right.
So that's the one glass. Then the other glass I poured was for the tart. It's not just for the tart. This is a dry Riesling from Alsace. Alsace is, we're German, no, we're French. No, we're German, no, we're French. So they grow German grapes in the French style, which is bone dry. And I was lucky enough to be there about 3 weeks ago in Strasbourg. And the wines, these have been some of my favorite food wines for decades.
This
and
is spectacular.
Yeah.
This is one that you could have after you ran a marathon. it's nice and dry, thirst quenching.
Well, with this one, it's, I feel like a lot of times when I offer people white wine, they're a little hesitant because I think it's going to be like really, really sweet white wine.
Because they're used to Chardonnay.
Right. And this is not. This is a white wine for red wine drinkers.
It's beautiful. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. And we go to Nancy in Little Falls. Nancy, you're on.
Thank you. Ray, I just wanted to say I'm extremely shocked to hear that you have never been invited to a dinner party, and I would like to hear about
it. He's been invited.
you've been invited but haven't accepted.
Well, I'm...
Love to have you come to the next dinner party I do.
Oh, you're very kind. I'm kind of antisocial, believe it or not. I'm like Johnny Carson. I sit in the corner.
He loved our dinner party, so, and he got really into it. But anyway, I've had a lot of dinner parties. I have never served liquor. No one has ever complained. But if they don't like it, as my husband said, they don't have to come or they can drink before they come.
Mm-hmm.
I rarely, if ever, have served appetizers because then people are too full to eat the huge dinner that I prepared because my husband was from Egypt and my parents were from the South. You don't serve like one pork chop per person. You have a whole platter. So if anybody wants three or four each, they can have them. and I always have a fancy dessert either waiting downstairs to bring up, or it's in the refrigerator, and that really makes a big difference to have that already and out of the way. But I love to entertain, and over the years I collect tablecloths, dishes, and glasses, and I can do it fancy or I can do it just very casual every day.
Hmm, that sounds good. I'm amazed, and no one brings their own. No one brings their own little hip flask with them.
No, never.
That's
never,
great.
Never. And most of my friends are drinkers, but they've never done that. And I think it would, if you go to somebody's house and they don't smoke, I would never dream of having somebody, of smoking inside their house if I was a smoker.
Yeah.
And I noticed too that, now I'm over 65, but when we go to parties now, most people are drinking a lot less than they used to, and virtually no one smokes.
So, Nancy, I actually have two of my best friends do not drink, and they come over to the house for dinner a lot. So I always try to do something besides just having seltzer out for them. And, this summer when they would come over, I just took, made basically like a lemonade, and
yes.
I steeped some lemon balm and rosemary. And when I was making the simple syrup and just added that with some fizzy water. And, it was like, what John was talking about before, a batch cocktail, except it didn't have any alcohol in it. So just having
something
a little
something to drink. I used to make our own grape juice, and I used to it was thick, so I used to dilute it with club soda or ginger ale,
right?
Or cranberry juice and ginger ale or whatever. But you know, we don't serve liquor. How do you know that you know somebody you know hasn't joined AA?
Yeah,
and you know that one drink. You know, I often wonder about people that take communion at a church that uses wine. If they take it, are they not susceptible to, you know, starting to drink all over again? I don't know.
Well, that's a good question.
Well, I think it's important either way is that you consider the needs of your guests. You know, ask in advance if somebody has a dietary issue or a food allergy or anything like that. So just having something on hand, even if you know that everybody there is a drinker, if somebody just gets tired of drinking that night, having something that you can offer is always a good idea.
Hey, Nancy, thank you very much for the call. Our number here on Food Friday is 800-348-2551. John Fisher is here from the Culinary Institute. Deanna Fox is here. I didn't know about this podcast. What's going on with that?
Oh, it's so much fun. Watch, read, listen, feed. The second episode is up.
If you go to it? It's at WAMC.
WAMC.org. If you go to the podcast link, it is fun. So it's myself and producer Dave Hopper and Jamel Mosley, who is a multimedia producer and a DJ, and Louise Hendry, who is a bookstore owner up in Steventown. She owns Down in Denver Books.
Ah.
And each episode we get together, we pick something to watch, to read, to listen, and to dine on.
Hmm.
And we suggest things to each other. And then we, you know, we all go and we watch these things, read them, whatever.
All right,
and
give
then
us
we
an
come
example.
Back. The second episode is Hedwig and the Angry Inch was what we watched.
Okay.
We read A Sport and a Pastime by James Salter. We used a Scotch bonnet pepper to each make a recipe, and we listened to Agnes Obel, who's a Danish songstress. And then we get together and we talk about if we liked it or we didn't, and then we kind of offer a 1 through 5 ranking, and whoever has the most points wins. And then
oh, it's a competition.
And then there's audience participation too, so you can email in, you can listen along, you can participate. And then you can decide if it was totally awesome, if it really stank.
I mean, that's an odd pairing of things.
Yeah.
How did that particular combination come about?
I think Dave and I had been talking about doing a podcast on something for a while, and this was just like a...
No, I don't mean the music and the film, but those particular musical and film selections. How did happen?
We basically pull from a hat. Whoever wins the competition gets to choose the thing that they want to choose, and then we go around based on how well we did. And I always seem to lose. People don't ever like my suggestions, so I always just get the leftover of the
foursome.
We're
on your side.
Thank you.
The number here is 800-348-2551. We have John Fisher here from the Culinary Institute and Deanna Fox, who apparently has a podcast right here on WAMC. And how do people get to that?
You just go to the podcast page on the WAMC website, and you'll see it. Of course, because it starts with a W, it's at the bottom of the list. But you can listen to it.
It's called Watch, Read, Listen, Feed.
Anywhere you get a podcast, you can find it.
All right, let's take a break here on a Food Friday devoted to dinner parties, and we'll find out why we need to avoid a soup course coming up here in a moment. Welcome back to Food Friday on WAMC. 800-348-2551 is the number. Deanna Fox is here and John Fisher, and they're telling us about dinner parties and what to do. And all this is very new to me. And you think I'm making it up? On the list here, you gave me a list of some do's and don'ts in bold type.
Apparently are all new to you.
Yeah, exactly. Avoid a soup course. Why?
Because it's such
a pain in the butt.
Why? What do you mean? You get open a can of soup, you put it out, right?
But then you have to keep it warm. And to serve it, like if you're having a sit-down dinner party and you want to serve everybody soup, it's awful to try to serve
If it's in the
everybody.
Plate, bring it from the kitchen. It's slopping all over the
Always.
Place. If you do it at the table, it's dripping all over the table.
That's right. So I feel like if you have to make soup, just have like a soup party. Make like two soups.
A soup party? Is there such a thing?
Yes, it's awesome. Are you kidding?
Apparently there is.
Stop it. Stop
Not at the Culinary Institute, eh, John? Okay.
No. Have, you know, if you want to, like, it's going to be cold weather soon. What could be better than just, like, getting together? Even if you're going to watch, like, a football game or something.
Right.
You know, pick a couple of people who are going to make soup. A couple of people make a salad. Somebody brings bread. Somebody makes brownies, whatever.
Yeah.
And then you can just try like chili and Italian wedding soup they brought in here before. And
well, chili's not a soup.
Well, excuse me, sir. It's served in a vessel like soup, and
I
you
see.
Have to keep it warm like a
so
soup.
So if it's
and
in a bowl,
it in
it's soup. I see. So this pudding is also soup.
Well,
I understand.
Listen.
But the soup stew, you know, range.
Boundary.
It's, you know, it's a gray area.
Really?
Oh, sometimes chili is really soupy, and it's good.
Okay.
But also, what I was going to say,
this.
The one thing I would say though, if you're like desperate to serve a soup, you could do something that like was contained in its own container, like a French onion soup.
Yeah,
where it's that crock that has the melted cheese on top, and it's not going to slosh all over the place. But you're all going to have people burning the tops of the roofs of their mouths too.
Right. So there's the OSHA and the lawsuit issues that we have to. Let's go back to the phones. Veronica in Saratoga. Veronica, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for the show. It's wonderful, by
sure.
the way.
Thank you.
I have always been on the lookout since I lived for a while in Italy for a really dry Prosecco, and I cannot seem to find one in this area. And I'm wondering if you can direct me to a place where I might be able to order a dry Prosecco or a particular vineyard that, you know, that produces it.
Well,
why were you whining? First, Zach the engineer gave me a funny look when you were making strange sounds there.
This is
kind of Fisher.
This winds me up a little bit because.
Wait,
the,
did you pay her to call in?
I did not.
Okay.
I did not. I love Prosecco when I'm in Italy and it's €3 a bottle and they serve it in a juice glass and that's how it's supposed to be served, casually and affordably. The thing is that Prosecco has taken on a monstrous proportion in this country. I don't know exactly why, because it's not all people who've been to Italy like you and I. And I don't know if these two have been to Italy also, but it is a fun sparkling wine. Thing is that once it gets here, people start treating it like champagne. That said, the first wine that we had, the Cremant d'Alsace, is a dry sparkling wine. You can just ask for a Cremant at a wine store, and it's going to be a dry bubbly with nice small bubbles. If you go into a good wine store and ask for a really dry sparkling wine from the United States, you're going to be getting a champagne-quality wine. It's made the champagne way. The problem with Prosecco is that some of it is being made for American palates now, and Americans like sweet things.
Oh, boy.
Americans talk dry but drink sweet. You know, okay. I want a dry wine, but I don't want it to be sour. And
okay.
It's the same thing.
So
Mionetto is actually a good brand of Prosecco that I would recommend.
Mionetto?
Mionetto with an M as in mnemonic.
Okay.
All right.
And what was the name of the dry white wine that you were talking about earlier?
Oh, very delicious.
It's a Riesling from Alsace in France. And because it's so close to Germany, they use German grapes in Alsace. But they make wine the French way, which is bone dry. So any Riesling from France, from Alsace, is going to be dry. And it is honestly one of the greatest food wines and most flexible food wines on the planet.
There you go. Thanks, Veronica.
Okay, thank you. And I'm just trying to figure out how to spell Althaus. Is it Allhaus?
No, it's Alsace. Allsace. It's the western part of France.
Thanks a lot, Veronica. We appreciate it.
Eastern part of France.
800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551 on a Food Friday. We go to Tom in Albany. Tom.
Hi, thank you for calling, or thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question, not exactly a dinner party, but I'm having people for brunch, and what would you recommend that's not going to, like, break the bank?
That's a dinner party.
Yeah.
And eggs are cheap.
Eggs?
Oh, yeah.
Omelets?
Shashuka. No.
What's a shashuka?
Yeah.
Eggs in purgatory. So you take tomatoes and peppers and something spicy, some sort of spicy dried pepper that you'd want to throw in there.
Yeah.
And you basically make this, like, really thick spicy tomato sauce, and you make these little wells in it, and you just crack eggs, and you put it in the oven, or you can do it on the stovetop too with a lid over your pot, and plan on like 2 eggs per person. And cook it just until, you know, I like my eggs a little bit on the firmer side, but you go as far as you want to go with the eggs. And you have this like self-contained dish that you basically just serve with really delicious toast. Get, you know, $4 a loaf bread, get a couple loaves, toast it up in the oven. And it is like the most delicious, filling, savory thing. Throw out some, you know, fruit salad. I take a little bit of ginger and make... like a simple syrup with some honey and some water. So 1-to-1, equal parts honey and syrup, honey and water with a little fresh ginger grated in and maybe some lime juice. And then you just toss that over some cantaloupe and blueberries or whatever you have in season and serve that. And then maybe do like, you know, a muffin or something. Don't go crazy. People think that you have to put so much out for a dinner party, and you really don't. Just do like focus on like 3 or 4 really, really good things. You know, do a cocktail brunch, make sure you have some hot coffee, and you're fine.
And, you know, have, like, a salad out there, some vegetables. Don't forget vegetables.
Salad for breakfast? No.
Yes.
No.
There's an unch in the word.
Come on, man.
There is an unch.
Thou shalt not eat any sort of green leafy vegetables at breakfast.
But, Tom, if you go online and you just look for a shishuka or just Google eggs in purgatory, you'll find a bunch of recipes, and they're all really good. They have some that are, like, for green tomatoes or tomatillos and whatever greens you have left over from your CSA or your garden or whatever. But you'll find a ton of recipes, and it's so easy. It's really quick. It's like you put it in the oven and you forget about it for 15 minutes, and it's awesome.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Tom, thanks a lot for the call. It's Vox Pop. It's a Food Friday, 800-348-2551. The sound effects man is John Fisher. He's from Culinary Institute. Every time you come on one of my shows, there's crackling of ice and everything. Good to have you here. Deanna Fox is here. She is the star of a new WAMC podcast, Watch, Read, Listen, Feed. Also, writing all right. You're writing on any, working on any writing project right now?
Yes, I was in Spain and France for almost a month.
Really?
Yeah, recently. So I've been writing a lot about that. And I'm heading to the Middle East at the end of the month, so more
good
writing.
Good for you. Mm-hmm. Did you know that Anissa Waheed, one of our favorites
love
here on
her.
The show?
Love her.
She was on that Guy Fieri program
a
couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Didn't make it all the way to the end, but was great.
She's amazing.
My
just
kids were so
story.
Impressed yeah. to watch. They said, you know her?
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing about TV. People get so, you're on TV. Oh, you must be. What about radio? I'm on the radio.
A face for radio.
The number is 800-348-2551. It's Food Friday. And what is this beverage, John Fisher?
So when I was talking about people coming in and trying to make it easy for yourself, this is a batched cocktail. So this is a Manhattan made with Mackenzie Rye from the Finger Lakes. Some great vermouth and 2 kinds of bitters, both Angostura bitters and orange bitters.
I could taste the orange.
And you put it in a vessel of some sort and then add some water. About 10 to 25% of the total volume should be water that is replacing what would be in there from the shaking or the stirring.
Yeah.
And you can pour it straight from this bottle into a glass, chilled, you know, keep it chilled, and you don't have to worry about the... Again, the ice bucket or the glasses are shaking the stirring.
Do people play along, though? You say, well, look, I've got these lovely Manhattans made. Or, I mean, you could...
Yes. You know why? Because people come to your house for dinner because they don't want to do any thinking.
Right.
They just show up and they want to be
that's
fed.
That's generally why people come to my house. That's true. That's a good point.
So if you just put
that's
like...
That's also why you go home.
That's why what John said earlier. If you just put something in their hand, they're going to be like... Okay, just give it to me. Yeah.
I have a question, and we'll get back to the phones in a moment. 800-348-2551. All right, all these tips are very good. What do you do when you want to get everybody out of your damn house?
Play Mozart.
Really?
That's what we did at the frat.
Okay, assuming you don't live in a frat house.
I just stand up. If I'm at the head of the table or someplace that's like convenient to the kitchen, if I stand up and I reach for something, like I'm clearing the table... I feel like it gives people the idea. Or if I just say, you guys, this has been so fun.
Really?
Yeah. And I feel like people get the hint. If somebody doesn't get the hint, if somebody's really daft, yeah, you kind of have to like, you know, or you say, oh, let me go grab your coat for you.
Oh. Okay.
Oh, that's
something
a good
settled.
One.
Yeah.
Have you not done that, John?
No, I will.
Your dinner parties go to 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning?
This is my other tip. The night before or whatever, before a dinner party, I make a batch of chocolate chip cookies. And I have brown paper sacks in my kitchen. It's just a staple. And I make one. I put like 4 or 5 cookies in there for each person.
Parting gifts.
Yes, because I feel like it's just like when you go out to eat. Like you sit and you linger and you talk for a bit. And then by the time you get in the car, you're like, man, I'm really hungry again. So I never want anybody to leave my house hungry. So if I give them some chocolate chip cookies or like a morning roll or something that they can have. Right. And then I just like be like, oh, thanks so much for coming. And I'm like, here, this is for you on the ride home. And
do you have to do this or do most people leave on their own accord?
Well, I've had dinner parties before where it's gone so late that people just spent the night and we had pancakes in the morning. So you also have that. But for the most part, I feel like people... Unless they're really daft, they kind of are like, all right. Like,
but then you end up with the Midwest goodbye, which involves talking on the porch for 15 minutes.
Well, right.
Then you get to the car, and it's 10, 15 minutes in the car. And then they get in the car, and you talk through the window.
And you guys are all okay with this? This is one of the reasons I would never do such a thing. Let's go back to the phones. Kier in Pleasant Valley, you're on.
Hey, John, I have a question about wine to be served with gazpacho soup.
I see this soup and wine is really hard because soup is wet and wine is wet and they kind of your mouth gets confused. I would say though that a really good dry rosé, I drink rosé year round. I know it's supposed to be a summer wine, but it's such a great food wine. But a good dry rosé, actually, now that I think of it, a sparkling rosé, like the one that I recommended at the beginning of the show, that the bubbles interrupt the texture of the soup, and they give you a little bit of a contrast from the soup to the wine. So a sparkling rosé with gazpacho, bang, done.
Perfect. I will do that this weekend. Thank you, John.
My pleasure.
Thanks a lot for the call, Kirk. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551.
This chocolate pudding is really good.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's good.
If you do say so yourself?
If I do say so myself.
It'll be good with the Manhattan, too.
We'll try that.
I noticed that. It was delicious together.
And then
quite nice.
The glasses keep on coming. What is this?
Well, welcome to my home. I basically wanted to bring some wines that were affordable, maybe a little bit off the beaten path, like the Cremant d'Alsace, and would be great with food. Very few people know about Alsace Riesling. Although it's available and wonderful stuff. And with most food, when Americans drink red wine, they think Merlot first and they think Cabernet Sauvignon second. Occasionally, someone saw the movie Sideways and they think about Pinot Noir, which is a great food wine. But on the whole, if you want to have one white wine to go with almost everything, it's a Riesling, a dry Riesling. And if it's a red, it's a dry, high acid red, light in body. This is a Cote d'Aron. I only brought this because I didn't have any Chianti in my basement.
Yeah.
But because Chianti is, by itself, it tastes like dirty sour cherries and is not pleasant at all. But when you put it on a table with food, all the flavors wake up. And Cote d'Aron is a similar wine in that it has some fruit on the nose, but it's dry and sour. If you think about what wine does with food, sour is vinegar like in a vinaigrette. Any minerality... Or dirt, dirt smells, good dirt smells, and
barnyard.
Good dirt flavors, barnyard. And in white wine, minerality, salt's a mineral. So the acid is the vinegar, and the minerality is the salt, and that's why it makes food taste better.
Mm.
So what would you serve for, like, a dessert? Like, would you serve,
one
a glass
of Hutch's
of scotch?
Stouts?
Yeah. A nice glass of port with a cigar? Can't go wrong.
Well, the thing is that with... really complex, delicious desserts, like from a fine pastry chef.
Oh, not with dessert. As dessert, I bet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. As dessert.
Yeah, nice port,
oh,
cigar.
Port is dessert.
Yeah.
Also, some of the Italian digestifs, some of the bitters that are a little sweet, like Ramazzotti and Averna. If you want to have, sweet wine. Sweet wine.
This red, by the way. I love it.
This with a steak, this with chicken, grilled chicken, grilled fish. The only thing this won't go with is poached flounder.
Why? Not that I would make poached flounder, mind you. But...
Because it won't. Okay. No, it would overpower. It would overpower
so
the delicacy
dry and sour.
Of that.
This is pretty much
and sour,
me.
And
okay.
It's good to...
John, you said that you had no Chianti in your basement. Like, it was a real problem for you. It was a real hardship that you had no
Chianti.
I am
in Chianti deficit.
By the way, as we've been talking about alcohol, we got a nice email from Carolyn who says, thanks to your guests for mentioning alcohol-free drinks when entertaining. Due to medication, I can no longer drink alcohol but miss the more sophisticated flavors. I don't want to drink soda, so I usually wind up drinking rivers of seltzer or water. Occasionally, someone will have sparkling cider or lemonade or the newest crafted ginger drinks, but that's it. I love the idea of steeping herbs in the sugar solution to mix with seltzer. I also make iced herbal teas or infusions to pair with seltzer when at home, sometimes with a splash of juice or lemonade. Is it possible, and might be somewhat easy, it is possible to make drinks without alcohol more interesting?
So when I was in Spain, I went to this one restaurant called Narua, which did a classic, you know, wine pairing to go along with their multi-course dinner. But then they did a non-alcoholic drink pairing, and it was so amazing and innovative, and it was based on juices. It was, you know, celery and cucumber juice that went with certain fish dishes, and it was beet juices and things like that. So you can you know, kind of tap in, like you would for wine, you can tap into flavors in juice or in other things, or kombucha or anything like that, and try to create your own pairing. So it's always really, you know,
be creative.
You know, wine is great and everything else, but if you're somebody who just doesn't drink, you know, you can be creative and you can be inventive and you can try new things.
And find flavors elsewhere. I had a colleague at school who was trying to make a non-alcoholic beer-type drink.
Ugh.
And he's making it with orange juice and pineapple, and he asked for some hops from the brewery. And the, you know, the current New England IPAs that are very fruity and pineapple-y.
Yeah.
You add some hops to pineapple juice, it's going to taste a little bit like one of those New England IPAs.
Oh, I'll be darned.
So try things like hops from a local homebrewing store, and herbs, and other things that will add flavor, interesting flavors, to something that doesn't have booze in it.
All right, let's quickly go. We only have about 30 seconds. 30 seconds, Francis, in Warwick, you have the floor. Go ahead.
Okay, for brunches, what about people that don't eat eggs?
What about people who don't eat eggs?
Do you want to give them protein still? You know, and you don't have to do meat.
Yeah, I mean, chickpeas. Yeah, you can do any kind of bean or legume product.
Tofu.
Tofu would work, yep.
Peanut butter?
No tofu, though.
Peanut butter.
Peanut butter toast.
I'm going to back up Ray on this.
Yeah.
Avocados, that's fat.
But I would go, you know, you can do so many things with chickpeas. You can take if you buy canned chickpeas and you buy the water that exists in the chickpeas that they're canned in is called aquafaba, and you can whip that up and you can do things like that, just like egg whites. So you could still do like a quiche kind of product with that, but then you can also, you know, you can't obviously fry an egg, but you can do with vegan egg substitution. You can do a lot of things.
All right, we are out of time, but thank you very much. And John Fisher, thank you for being here. Good luck with the brewery. We'll, I'm sure, hear from you soon regarding the brewery. Deanna Fox, thank you again for being here.
Thank you.
And your podcast can be found. We can find out more at WMC.org, yeah?
Yes.
All right. Eat your pudding.
Thank you.
Support comes from Buttermilk Falls Inn, Milton, New York, taking reservations for lodging, dining, spa treatments, weddings, and special events on a 75-acre Hudson River estate, buttermilkfallsinn.com. Cooperstown Farmers Market, in its 28th year, bringing farmers and artisans together to provide all things local. Open every Saturday year-round, CooperstownFarmersMarket.org. Viva Fresh Pasta, 30 years and 30 wines by the glass. European cuisine infused with flavors of the world. Northampton, Massachusetts. Grab life by the knife and fork. VivaFreshPasta.com. And Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine and beer and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tastings Saturday afternoons, SpiritHAUS.com. Thanks again to John Fisher and Deanna Fox for being here today. Thanks to you for listening and for the great calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Barb King took your calls. Our producer, Jim Lavoulis. He's not here, but he's still our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Have a lovely weekend. Alan will be back in the big chair on Monday. It's a medical Monday. Right now, stand by for news.